Tim O'Brien received the 1979 National Book Award in Fiction for Going After Cacciato. His other works include the acclaimed novels The Things They Carried, July, July, and In the Lake of the Woods. Written before Going After Cacciato, If I Die in a Combat Zone, Box Me Up and Ship Me Home is an intensely personal account of O'Brien's year as a foot soldier in Vietnam. The author takes us with him to experience combat from behind an infantryman's rifle, to walk the minefields of My Lai, to crawl into the ghostly tunnels, and to explore the ambiguities of manhood and morality in a war gone terribly wrong. Welcome, Tim O'Brien.
Many thanks.
Now, If I Die in a Combat Zone was first published in 1973, so for those of us not familiar with the book, could you please give us a bit of background on it and also bring us up to date with anything significant that's happened since, either, you know, with the book yourself, the people in it, and so on?
Sure. The book was written partly in Vietnam itself, in the evenings after a day's march. We would dig our foxholes and prepare for the night, and in the last hour or two of daylight, I would now and then sit at my foxhole and jot down something of what had occurred that day or the day before. And over the course of my tour in Vietnam, I accumulated probably 30 or 40 handwritten pages. Two portions of the book were actually published while I was in Vietnam, and another portion was published immediately after my returning home. The remainder of the book was written over the next 2 years, having come back from the war, and it was published when I was fairly young. I was 27 years old, and it's a memoir. It's an account of what I had gone through in Vietnam, but also an account of the moral struggle I had with whether to go to the war in the first place. I'd been opposed to the war as a college student. It seemed to me that the best you could say about Vietnam was that certain blood was being shed for uncertain reasons, which is to say the bodies were for sure, and the orphans and the widows and the maimed. There was no dispute about that, but there was much dispute about the rectitude of the war. Smart people in pinstripes couldn't make their minds up about whether the war was right or wrong. Congress was divided. The whole country was divided. And it seemed to me as a young man facing that draft notice that it's not a great idea to go off killing people unless the country's pretty sure it's the right thing to do. And our country was not sure. And yet I found myself facing that terrible decision. What do you do when you get a draft notice and you think a war is wrong? And I struggled with that for months prior to my being inducted into the Army, and I'm still struggling with it 40 years later. In terms of what's happened since, we have two new wars, of course, those in Iraq and Afghanistan. And it strikes me that now, 40 years after the publication of If I Die in a Combat Zone, the book probably is as relevant now as it ever was, because the wars are so similar, mine and those we're going through now. In both cases, guerrilla wars, who's your friend, who's your enemy, no uniforms, no front, no rear, landmines blowing us up, all the frustrations and kind of bitterness that infects a soldier when you can't find an enemy. The enemy can find you, but you can't find the enemy. And as a consequence, you come home with not that sense of pride and sense of sacrifice that my dad felt, for example, in coming home from World War II. It's much more ambiguous now and much more confusing.
And so do you mean to say that the country hasn't learned a darn thing?
Yeah, that's what I mean to say.
Is there any qualitative difference in the way that the country seems to be treating the soldiers and the vets now? I mean, I guess there's a lot of lip service given to that.
Well, there is a difference. One of the responses to Vietnam has been that Americans now realize that the soldiers themselves aren't to blame for what has gone wrong or with these military adventures. And there's a forgiveness now toward the soldier that I didn't experience on coming and returning home from Vietnam. So I think that is different. Another difference between what happened in my era and what is going on right now is that I was a draftee. I was conscripted. I had to go or else go to jail, one of the two. And our present Army, of course, doesn't face, they're all volunteers. There's no draft. And as a result, the wolf is not at the door for most Americans. You know, all across America, back in my era, there were doorbells ringing and letters arriving and telegrams arriving saying you've been drafted. But in this era, it's only those who wish to join the military are doing our fighting and our dying for us. And that's a big difference when the wolf isn't at the door and it's not your son who has to go or your daughter who has to go, but somebody else. And it's a lot easier to be bellicose in your rhetoric and all for a war if there's no personal stake in it.
The title itself, If I Die in a Combat Zone, Box Me Up and Ship Me Home, is that part of a chant or a saying?
It is. It was a song we sang during basic training and advanced individual training when you kind of learned how to be an infantryman in my case. And there was a melody to it, and we would sing it as we marched around Fort Lewis, Washington, in the rain and in the cold, preparing for, this jungle war.
Recently, in the last several years, there's been a debate about, the propriety of the president greeting the fallen and greeting the coffins and the family. I guess in the previous presidency, they opted not to do that, or at least not to do it publicly. And now I think it was something that the president felt he should be doing. Do you have any thoughts or feelings about that?
Well, I do. I mean, I think it's, if I were an 18-year-old kid and dying in Afghanistan or Iraq and my country didn't want to look at my coffin, it wasn't allowed to be photographed or shown on television, I'd be a ticked-off soldier. A dead ticked-off soldier, but ticked-off nonetheless. If we're going to send young people to die for us, the least we can do is take cognizance of their coffins, so that they've died. Back in the Vietnam era, as everyone who lived through that time knows, the war was coming into living rooms all across this country. There were firefights were being filmed or videotaped, and reporters are out in the field, and America watched that war and all its ugliness. And, of course, none of that is happening now, which I think is part of the same syndrome of camouflaging or sanitizing or sprinkling Ajax over a war to disguise its ugliness. War is an ugly thing, whether it's a good war or a bad war, a war of great righteousness or a silly war. But in any case, it's ugly. And to hide the ugliness seems to me to be telling a kind of lie. It seems deceptive that Americans have every right to know what is happening with their tax dollars and what's happening to their young men, whether it's pretty or not pretty.
Mm. And, there are so many issues that we could take up from, women serving in the military and now gays and lesbians serving in the military. Also, the use of drones. Was any of this part of your original book or experience?
Well, in a sense, yes, and in a sense, no. Women did not serve in combat positions when I was in Vietnam, and to the best of my knowledge, still don't. But there are, at the same time, many, many more women in harm's way. You don't, in a war such as those in Vietnam, Afghanistan, and Iraq, there's no really safe area. Rockets don't know, what's safe and what's not, and mortars don't know, and artillery doesn't know, and so on. So many more women are now serving in the armed forces. And in fact, I interviewed a woman for a magazine not too long ago who had lost a leg in Iraq. She was a young woman from Guam who had joined the Army with the hope of making a better life for herself and maybe getting the GI Bill benefits afterward. And now she's at Brooke Army Medical Center in San Antonio learning to walk on one leg. So women are bearing much more of the brunt of violence than back in my time.
And so now you've pointed out it's the 40th anniversary of the publication, and just as relevant as ever. Do you anticipate that a lot of the returning veterans of these recent wars will find some either comfort or something to relate to in your story, and is that what you're hoping for? And what kind of a message do you want to have for them and for the country in general?
One of the amazing things about publishing a book 40 years ago, If I Die in a Combat Zone, is that it's not just relevant today, I think, but is being read today. I get a lot of letters from people, men and women, mostly men, serving in Iraq and Afghanistan, who carry If I Die in a Combat Zone with them along in their rucksacks, and also the things they carried in other of my books. And I get letters, too, from the sons and the daughters and the wives of these veterans, many of whom say the same thing. They'll say, my husband or my brother won't talk about the war. He's gone silent. But at least having read these books, I know something of what Jack is going through, or my husband has gone through, or my brother, that I wouldn't know otherwise. And those are the kinds of letters that bring tears to my eyes and make my heart clench up with a kind of joy that I've done something for someone. Because wars in general are so hard to talk about. So you don't want to disturb people by recounting your war stories, and you don't want to rock the boat, and you don't want to seem self-pitying. So you go silent. On top of that, many veterans don't know where to begin. There's so much to talk about. Every moment that goes by seems drenched in tension and stress, and your own mortality, and veterans have a hard time talking about it. And so in a way, I look at If I Die in a Combat Zone and my other books as a way of speaking as well as I can for not just myself, but for all those men and women who serve in combat.
This is the first time that If I Die in a Combat Zone is coming out as an audiobook. I'm just curious if you listen to audiobooks, and what might you be listening for in this one, which is narrated by Dan John Miller.
Well, I have listened to audiobooks. I listened to an audiobook of one of my own books, The Things They Carried. And it's a completely different experience from reading my own work. There's a narrator whose job it is to animate the book, to make it come vividly real and present for a reader. It's fascinating to listen to the tones with which a narrator will read a book and to compare them to the ways in which I might read it, what I might emphasize and what I might go low-key on. With a book such as If I Die in a Combat Zone, it's also fascinating to just listen for the sounds of Vietnam, which are in the lingo in the book, in the language, the ways in which soldiers speak to one another, and to hear those sounds, the sound of the human voice at war, through a really good narrator, is really a compelling and fascinating experience.
Well, we thank you so much for spending time with us today, Tim O'Brien, author of If I Die in a Combat Zone, available as an audiobook from Tantor.com. Thank you so much.
Thank you.